This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Utopia Media's Utopia Voting News. We're about to speak to Larry Franchman, who is principal at eVote.ca Inc. In Canada. Welcome to Utopia Media's Utopia Voting News.
Thanks very much, Mark, and thank you for having me.
Before we start talking about the technology, let's talk a little bit about the business history. What exactly and where within the structure of selling software that and systems and services that provide for remote internet voting is eVote.ca Inc. Situated?
Yes, it's a federally incorporated company in Canada. We spent some time searching for what we thought was the most secure, most robust, best voting software out there, and we fastened upon the software put out by Everyone Counts out of the UK and Australia, otherwise known as E1C. We are at present the Canadian reseller for that software. We as well do a fair bit of work with E1C putting out its wares in the United States.
So okay. It's now, all right, so let's talk about Everyone Counts as a company and a product. It's Australian-based?
Yes, they're out of Melbourne. This product was incubated as between the University of Melbourne and KPMG. It was subsequently purchased by the current principal of E1C, Mr. Craig Burton.
Okay, and where else does Everyone Count operate besides Australia and through you in Canada?
There's a fair bit of work that we're doing in the United States, as I say, in the United Kingdom, in Spain, and a smattering of European countries.
Okay, and what services do you provide, and who mostly takes advantage of them?
Well, it's a mix. The services we provide are internet voting, whether via kiosks or remote internet voting. A number of our clients also require hybrid services. So, for instance, right now we're in the midst of a vote for a national association in Canada where they've got running the internet channel as well as a mail channel.
Okay. And how many clients would you say you have, if that's not too proprietary?
That's fairly proprietary.
All right. What about the number of people who vote using this system at the present time, overall, worldwide?
Yeah, I think we're up in the low millions in terms of voters of the pool of voters that could have voted.
Okay. Mention one or two recent voting projects that you've worked on.
We're active in the United States with universities. Last month we did a couple of referendums for Eastern Washington University. The month before, I believe, there was a project at Cornell University. Last year, there was a large pilot project as part of the United Kingdom e-democracy trials. So we're all over the place doing a lot of work.
How about the Canadian Smooth Jazz Awards?
Sure. We did that recently. And as I say, we're doing a national association as we speak, as in today, and a number of other wonderful organizations across the country.
Okay, so you're mainly or exclusively right now working with private organizations, trade associations, membership associations, rather than governmental jurisdictions.
Yes, we're knocking on that door, but my take is that it's early days yet for widespread public adoption as opposed to in the private arena.
What would you say are the reasons for that?
Increased security requirements. It's got to be a double-blind anonymity. Public concerns, that stems from the initial comment. Where democracy is at stake, the hackers of the world unite, and perhaps there's more incentive to get in the mix in applications of that nature. It's a public acceptance thing more than anything. We are being asked to demonstrate our product to municipalities, for instance, but the incentives are different whether you're dealing public or private. And public, I think rightly so, should be the last constituents on this continuum to adopt e-voting. It should be fully accepted by the public in the private sphere first.
Okay, because the people who use it in the private sphere are also citizens and also vote in governmental elections.
Exactly, and I think that's the normal course in which it'll flow upstream.
Okay. Recount some of the advantages to organizations or eventually governments of using remote internet voting.
Well, the advantages are certainly cost. The cost estimates I've heard in terms of getting out and bringing back in a paper ballot range from about $4 to $8 per voter.
Right.
We are running a fraction of that. We're currently charging at the rate of 50 cents rather per voter.
So the cost savings is about 85% of the cost.
There's a tremendous cost saving. There's the efficiency, of course, in terms of the count,
right.
In terms of the accuracy of the count.
Speed of the count.
And you can rely upon it. You can rely upon it if, in fact, you're using a system that is auditable or verifiable,
right.
Which is what we feature. Those are the main features. There's the convenience aspect, of course.
Okay. And to be fair, what are the downsides or the obstacles or impediments to implementing the system?
Sure. There are the security concerns, which must be addressed. There's the issue of the digital divide issue. Does everybody have equal access? Those, I think, are the primary concerns.
Okay. Why don't we talk a little bit about the technology? Why don't we start from the point of view of the user, of the association, or again, eventually a government. When they come to you, what do you make available? What do they have to do? How much can you do for them?
Yes, in the normal course, we will correspond with them, securely obtain their database of users, securely affix to those users' PIN numbers, which are used to log in, and normally it's a page set up per vote, of course, and it's just a question of these people, the members or what have you, logging in at their convenience and voting.
Okay, and now, and how do the PIN numbers, the organization or the government jurisdiction would give you the database of their registered voters?
Or we can just give them the PIN numbers if there's any concern in that regard.
Okay.
But the point is, there's extra identifiers attached to existing database,
right.
To secure matters.
There's
no double voting, things of that nature.
Right. Do you have the technical and or administrative capability to do the registration yourself using your system?
Oh, absolutely. And different clients will require different registration procedures, whether it's one tier, two tier, that type of thing.
So it could be, for example, say it's a public television station membership list. People who may need to be on that list to sign up, but then they can sign up for a special event or something.
Yes.
And be more deeply registered.
Yes.
Okay. And so then how do you get these PIN numbers to the voters, members? Does it happen on the web? Does it use a postal service? Or how does
either
that work?
Either or. We can do any combination. What is the most efficient is, of course, simply sending it out via a standard emailing through our system.
Okay.
For members that don't have email, we, of course, simply use the post.
Okay. But then, of course, the ones who don't have email, how are they going to get to the computer eventually to do it?
If there's a large constituent of people without email in that group, we will likely be running a hybrid election allowing mail ballots as well.
Okay.
Or we can offer kiosk services or if there is a centralized computer, depending on what type of group we're dealing with. Some would prefer that it all be online, but it's a herded arrangement where it's via a kiosk.
Okay. So the person, and in fact, you could make getting the PIN number contingent upon being able to provide any number of tokens of information, ranging from date of birth, social security number, up to an infinite number of tokens that people would be required to provide, or just show up.
Yes, entirely dictated by the client.
Okay. Let's say it's election day or election period, and I want to vote now for my favorite smooth jazz performer or prime minister or both. Nobody runs for both of those. I get very few jazz musicians in political life that I can think of for reasons that are probably too complex to go into here. But what's the process for me then as a voter to use the Everyone Counts system?
Yes, relatively simple. You'll log in providing one or more identifiers set by the client to get you in, and then the ballot will render, and we endeavor to set it out in a format as possible, because usability concerns always come to the fore when we're dealing with online items. So our software is such that the ballot is designed simply, and it renders across various types of browsers.
Okay.
So you merely log in and click, depending on the configuration of the election, but you'll choose your candidates, press submit. You'll always be...
Okay, before we get to the submitting part, let me back up a little bit. These ballots can either be facsimiles of rather staid traditional Australian ballots or whatever, but they can also include additional information about the candidates or their positions or the parties.
Absolutely, yeah. I've glossed over that.
Right, well, talk about that a little.
In almost every case, we try to provide a little more rich experience simply because we have that ability. So when you click on a candidate's name, chances are that will be linked to that candidate's statement and materials that were provided to us to post to give further background information.
Right. Now, on the sample on your site now, which we're going to link to on this article, when you have a sort of an all-time all-star list of people running for office. You've got Abraham Lincoln running against Robert Menzies, I think.
Okay.
And what pops up is a little biography.
Yeah, that would be an example.
But that could include, in fact, or could be formatted to include flash files or video or almost any kind of digital media, couldn't it?
Exactly. It's just the only constraint is we want you to stay on the site within the ballot for security reasons.
Right.
But that said, there's no real limit to what we can link there or provide there, rather, to offer further information.
Which would mean a jurisdiction that wanted to provide essential information, even vetted information about a candidate, what he or she promised or what their experience has been or any number of factors.
It could all be there.
Could all be there, so that rather than relying on, say, slick and possibly deceitful television commercials to get information about the candidates, your system essentially can expand to provide, if not accurate, at least vetted or somehow controlled information about the candidates in a way so that contributions to candidates to pay for the budget for the advertising and the creation of the spots and the buying of the time can all be obviated, and people who want to know about the candidates can find it out as part of the ballot, which they could access throughout the campaign and only use to vote on the day or the period set aside for that voting. Is that right?
Fair enough.
Okay.
Fair enough.
Okay.
The accuracy, of course, dictated by what we are given.
Of course, absolutely.
But,
well,
yes.
We can't reform human nature here, or that part of the process. And who would want politics without lying anyway? I mean, isn't that part of the experience?
Fair enough.
All right, so I see my candidates, and I go and visit their flash files or their video or their text saying all their promises and so on, and then I decide it doesn't have to be what I guess people outside the United States called first past the post. There are a range of electoral options or structures that your system supports. Is that right?
Yes, virtually all counting methods our system can be configured to support.
Why don't